Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Friday, and welcome to Alive to Thrive with Brenda Fraser. Each week, Brenda brings you interesting guests and timely topics to uplift and motivate you to be all that you can be today and for all your tomorrows. Join Brenda and Alive to Thrive every Friday at noon Central Time, right here on Greater Good Ministries Radio. And now, here's Brenda Fraser.
Hello, and welcome to Live to Thrive. My name is Brenda Fraser. It's Friday, which means we have some interesting, an interesting guest here with us today, Dr. Sharon Franklin. She is calling in from Virginia. And we met a few years ago through some health and wellness work that we are both interested in. She has such an incredible background. She has traveled to Peru more than 20 times, and we'll be talking about some of the ancient wisdom traditions of Peru. She's also a pilot, a flight instructor, a vet, does a lot of animal wellness coaching and teaching, and is an entrepreneur. So welcome, Sharon. Are you with us?
Yes, I am, Brenda. And just want to thank you so much for having me on the show today. It's really appreciate your wonderful introduction, and just really excited to be here and visit with you and share with your listeners.
Well, we were talking earlier before going live that, you know, I knew you in sort of only one capacity, and it was such a pleasant journey of discovery to look at your various websites and to learn especially about your spiritual path, which many of us are on that listen to this program and that listen to Greater Good Ministry Network. And so I was really interested to talk with you about the book that you and your husband wrote, John Franklin, called The Gift of the Jaguar, which has, some stories that were inspired by your own personal spiritual exploration and trips to Peru. So let's talk a little bit about that. How did you first get introduced to, or what put you on your path to learn more about various traditions, you know, whether it's Peru or Native American traditions? How did you get started?
Well, great question. I have always been interested in spirituality and grew up in the Catholic Church and was just really passionate about that connection with a higher power, with God, with the Creator. And so throughout my years, spent time in libraries looking at reading different spiritual traditions, different native traditions, different philosophies, and started reading about them and then studying with different teachers about different ways of looking at spirituality and health and well-being. And after finding books about native spirituality and connection with nature and the Creator being manifested in nature, decided that it was time to find a teacher that would be able to, you know, explore more of this with. And so John and myself found ourselves going to a workshop with a teacher that had studied with Native North American people and then Native South American people, and had the traditions of both North and South America, more specifically Peru and South America. And so we went to a first workshop with him that was a weekend workshop, and so enjoyed it that it turned into a 3.5-year study program with him. And during that time, ended up traveling with him to the southwest of the United States, to New Mexico and Arizona, and touring Chaco Canyon and Canyon de Chelly, and meeting Native Navajo people. And then we ended up traveling to Peru with this teacher, Alberto Vialdo, for three different trips to Peru, and just fell in love with the land, nature, with the people, and then with the indigenous healing traditions. And
Hold on. There's so much that you're covering, a lot of ground, and it's fascinating, this whole journey that it started with attending a workshop. And you had originally heard about that workshop through a publication, I understand, called Shaman's Drum. Can you talk about that publication? I found their website, shamansdrum.org, and how you even found that publication.
Being kind of a seeker of wisdom and different traditions, was at a bookstore, the Heritage Bookstore, probably in Virginia Beach on the trip, and saw this magazine, The Shaman's Drum, and it's a compilation of articles that are written by people from all around the world from different indigenous healing perspectives, and it talks about their travels and their studies with these Native teachers. And so
in that
that was where I was introduced to Dr. Alberto Vialdo through that.
So it's just fascinating to me that through a casual visit to a bookstore, I mean, you had the awareness, you had an awakening, you were, as you said, a spiritual seeker. You pick up this publication, you see an ad about a workshop, you go to this workshop, and it sets in motion a chain of events that ultimately dramatically changes your life and impacts you and your husband, John. So you first started traveling to the Southwest, I understand. Can you talk about that a little bit? The lessons you learned from the North American Native traditions?
It was a delightful trip. My first experience out in the Southwest. And so, but just learning about their connection with nature, I think maybe in the East, it's a different energy here than in the West, and the vast, open, expansive space out there. It just feels different when you step off the airplane. And being with those people that so are connected to the land and revere the land is, I think, probably one of the overriding spiritual messages was about how sacred the earth is and our connection with the earth. And so being with those people, it's a special feeling and atmosphere to be with people that revere the Creator in creation and see it happening. So that probably that connection, and then being tied to, you know, being able to work with the elements, with the earth, with the water, with the wind, with the air, and being in dynamic relationship, so that we're definitely in partnership with the earth, in partnership with nature, was probably one of the most dynamic things that we came away from that trip with, and
wow.
celebrating,
and, I totally agree with you. And for listeners that are, you know, hearing this program from the East or the Midwest, if you have not yet been to the Southwest part of the country, get there and get there soon, because it had the same impact on me. I mean, I grew up in New England and spent a lot of time in D.C. and sort of lived a very rat race life. And when I moved to Colorado and started exploring the West, yeah, it was so different. Like you said, the vast expanse of space, meeting people that are more connected to the earth and have that sacred connection, and also using natural plant-based medicine in treating illness or animals or people, or, you know, just that it's so connected. There's no disconnect like there is in other parts of the country, would you say?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's an excellent point, is that recognizing that there's wisdom in the earth, there's wisdom in the plants, and there's wisdom in the animals, and as well as in people. So that you're right, recognizing the wisdom in the plants, and we can work with these plants and invite them to help us heal different aspects of whatever we're looking to heal or improve. It's special. You're exactly right.
Was there any specific plant, or, you know, were there things about, say, cacti or, you know, desert plants that specifically, something that sticks out in your mind that you were introduced to while you were there?
Well, more so in Peru. We had spent such a short time on that one trip in the Southwest that we didn't really have as much chance to get deep into the plants. We worked with a lot of the elements, with fire and with water and the ceremonies around fire and such. But more in Peru, we were able to learn more about plants. And like you say, different regions of the country have different sacred plants that they work with that will work on a physical, emotional, and spiritual level. So there are plants that neither animals or people can eat. There's plants that animals can eat but people can't. There's plants that both animals and people can eat. And then there's the sacred plants that will bring upon a deeper connection with health and spirituality and wellness. And so we've been introduced to some of those different plants more in our trips to Peru.
So this this is a big departure, too, from what you were doing prior to this exploration, going to the Southwest and going to Peru, because you were a vet for 14 years and had an animal hospital. Let's talk about that. So you had a scientific kind of orientation. You had gone to vet school at Virginia Tech, correct?
Correct, uh-huh.
And so you've always loved animals. You've always loved nature. And what was interesting when we were talking earlier is that you were living in Lynchburg and Virginia, and you didn't have a television. And I think that's just so interesting, that because you know, a lot of Americans are so caught up in mass culture, pop culture, but you weren't. You were in a place where you had to seek out sort of, you know, things to entertain and expand your knowledge base, and going to the libraries and reading these different books. But and your husband also, too, was a veterinarian, is that correct?
Yes, uh-huh, yep. So we had a mom and pop small animal practice.
Okay. And so you took your knowledge of animals, then you kind of added this other piece with the not learning more about plants and about the elements, and I think that's interesting, about the fire and the element of fire. And then you blended that with your own spiritual journey. So let's talk about Peru. What were some of your experiences there, and how did those early trips there that when you started going there, you know, spark this lifelong passion for that country and for that culture, and now, you know, going there, you know, taking other groups of people there. So what impressed you when you first started going there, I guess?
It's similar to what you talked about with the Southwest. When we arrived in Peru, you fly into Lima, the capital, which is at sea level, and then we flew directly from there to Cusco, which was the capital of the Inca Empire, which is in southern Peru in the Andes Mountains, at about 11,000 feet. And you step off the airplane and you're immediately in a different environment, with the altitude. It's hard to talk about, but it's expansive. And you know, we got there, and it's so much more connected to nature. Like we were talking about the Southwest, they don't typically have indoor heating per se. They use fireplaces. They certainly don't have air conditioning. And of course, this is in the mountains. In the city, they would have that more, I would think, in Lima, in the capital. But so you're connected with nature, and it's a special partnership with nature. And so just the majesty of the mountains, of the rivers, and the way the people are in communication with the elements. We just fell in love with the land, with the culture, the Hispanic culture. They speak a native dialect or language of Quechua, but then a lot of people in the cities will speak Spanish, and then some people will speak English. But so we fell in love with the Hispanic culture, but also the native culture, and family being so important. So there's so much richness there that we were exposed to, and then learning about their connection and their seeing the Creator actively in the mountains, calling the mountains Apu Christu or Apu Christ, Mountain Christ. So blending their native spirituality within Catholicism, which came with the Spanish conquest, and now more recently more with, again, Christian Protestant traditions, but seeing them weave these traditions together was amazing.
Mm, wow. So you got to visit some ancient sacred sites, and you got to see things that most normal tourists don't get to see, and learn about the Incas and the pre-Incas and, you know, working with the elements. And so how did these trips grow into the book that John and you co-wrote on, called In the Gift of the Jaguar? Tell us about the book.
Well, the book is taken from a lot of our experiences in Peru and the environment there. It's set in Peru, and it's the story of a young man coming of age, and it's his vision quest, as it were, to become a healer for his people. And the people in the book are based on the Queros, which is a tribe of people that live in the upper Andes Mountains at around 15 to 17,000 feet. So the book is a lot of the healing traditions that John has studied the principles of zero balancing, which is a body energy alignment system, a system of health and well-being, and then a lot of the native traditions and beliefs of the native healers there. So it's kind of an interweaving of all of the different types of traditions that we've studied with, but placed in Peru and in this young man's trip to the sacred mountain, which is a mountain that we were first traveled to when we went to Peru, and it holds just a very, very special place in our hearts. And in a lot of their cosmology, the native people believe that the creator still lives in the mountains, and then the mountains are connected to the stars, and then the stars, of course, to the heavens. And so you have this grid work of energy and light as kind of a backdrop of this story of a young man finding his way through some pretty perilous times as a child. His sister is killed, and he's coming to grips with that, and then the spirituality of dealing with life and death. So it's an interweaving, but it's a story of adventure and a story of a young man coming into his own and then coming to be a healer, finding his partner, a young girl that he had grown up with, and her grandfather became his mentor and taught them both and brought them along to be medicine people for their tribe, their community.
Cool. Now, the symbol of a jaguar, which is on the cover of the book cover, the jaguar becomes a teacher of life and death. I love that. And then you had sent me a picture, and I think I put this up on my Facebook page, facebook.com/alive to thrive. There's a picture of you with a black dog, which I assume is your dog, and a big cat. Is that a jaguar in that picture?
That actually is a cougar.
A cougar cat. How on earth did you get a cougar in such a friendly lying down position with your personal pet with you? I mean, tell us about that picture.
Well, that is just one of the most amazing days that I was able to spend through our trips. John and I attend the North American Veterinary Conference in Orlando, Florida, every year. It's the largest international veterinary conference in the world. And so a mutual friend of ours that lives in Orlando that we've known for probably 15 or 20 years had got to meet through his wife this gentleman that has a preserve, as it were, for large cats. And he had two Siberian tigers, two Bengals. He had three cougars and a bobcat, a panther, and then some domestic cats. And at the time, he had five German shepherds. He bred German shepherds, and this friend of ours actually had gotten one of his shepherd puppies. And so he introduced us. This friend of ours introduced me to this gentleman, Carl Bovard, who has his nonprofit is called Single Vision in Florida, Melrose, Florida. And so I had the opportunity through our friend to meet with Carl at his home and got to meet his amazing family of animals. And it's one of the most special days of my life to be there with those big cats running and playing with that cougar in the picture, and then being able to be with, he also has a lioness, with the Siberian tigers, with the lioness, and it was just a special moment that just transcends time and space, really spiritual. And it just was so precious to be in the presence of those majestic cats. And
so was the black dog in the picture your dog or his dog?
Actually, that was one of his shepherds. We had two black Labradors, and he reminds me of that. But that's one of the shepherds giving me a kiss while I was playing with the cougar.
Wow, that's fascinating. So backing up, we were talking about the importance of living an inspired life before we came live on the air today, and that your husband's passion was to write, and he pursued his passion and wrote the majority of the book of The Gift of the Jaguar, and then your passion was to learn how to fly. Let's talk about that, because that is, you have all these different interesting parts of your life, and taking flying lessons later in life is something people often talk about, but they don't ever take action on. So how did, where did this dream start, and how did you decide to act on it?
Well, you're exactly right about dreams. And so we would, during our lunchtime from the animal hospital, we would go work out, and then we would have a bag lunch, and then sometimes walk through a park before we went back to the practice for our afternoon appointments. And we would talk about our dreams. And one of my dreams, I love the air, I love flying kites and love nature. And so flying was one of those dreams. And so we actually took an adventure down to Copper Canyon in Mexico after we had seen something on a travel channel when we were on another little adventure. And we were staying at a hotel, and there was a TV, and they had that show, and we saw this Copper Canyon similar to the Grand Canyon. And so we ended up taking backpacks, going to Copper Canyon, and sitting on the side of the canyon, we shared our dreams, and we continued that discussion during our lunch times from our practice. And one of my dreams was to learn to fly, and so when we got back from this trip from Mexico, Copper Canyon, there was an air show or we had a local festival, and they were giving air rides for $10. And I saw it in the paper, and within 10 minutes, I said, "Tom, they're giving air rides. Do you want to go?" And he said, "No, you go ahead." So I had got my shoes on and went right out to the airport, and my ride happened to be, the pilot happened to be an instructor, and earlier that year, after our conversations, I had bought a textbook and started studying on my own, and doing what I could on my own. And so again, it was one of those things, okay, I've taken this as far as I can go myself, and I asked the pilot, I said, I would like to learn to fly, I'm studying the book myself, when would you suggest flying? He said, "Well, I would start now and pair them together." And so that week I started with my very first lesson, and I was in love with it. And so just loved it. And one thing led to another. I got my private, and this is while we were still in practice. And so I was, I would take one or two days, an afternoon a week, and then a weekend day, and take a lesson, probably two lessons a week or so, and went from my private rating to my instrument rating, and then got my commercial, and so it was just one logical step to the next, but fell in love with it, and just the path kept opening.
I just have to chuckle that, that you just were so passionate about it, and from an air show ride, it sounds like Amelia Earhart, we were talking that life is short, and it's important to go after your dreams, and to live an inspired life. So do you coach other people now on doing that, of, you know, not just having wishful thinking, but actually putting a plan in place to pursue dreams?
I do. And it, again, because I have so many different interests, it comes in different venues. One of the young people that I'm mentoring right now is I love it for people to be passionate in going after their dreams. And my belief is that if we all had the opportunity to pursue our dreams and to be supported in that, to be mentored in that, that we wouldn't have a lot of the issues in society that we have right now. And I think that really being joyful and being happy and feeling fulfilled is so important. And so one of the things I'm doing right now is working with a young man who's a sophomore in high school, and he is a very gifted baseball pitcher. And through his grandfather, who is a friend of mine, I have become his catcher, his bullpen catcher. And so I have had to bring my skills of baseball up to a more elite level, as well as get a lot more protection with shin guards and such things, chest protectors and face masks, and really good catcher's mitt. But he's throwing in the low 90s now as a sophomore in high school. And is a sweetheart, is gifted and passionate and wants to be the best that he can be. And so it kind of just grew out of catching with him at a picnic a year and a half ago to then being asked what I'd like to really catch for him. And so his grandfather and I have been working with him, and his grandfather really focuses more on the mechanics. I focus more on catching the ball. But it's just been such a treasure to work with this just beautiful young man and to see him pursue his dream. And it's taken us traveling to different states to watch him play. He's now being pursued by different colleges and offered scholarships. And so it's a real blessing to be able to support him, and especially in the pitching and catching, but then also as he starts looking at colleges and, you know, having been through the educational system, being able to help him with knowing what questions to ask and what to look for and you know, how to approach things. And so it's really turned into a lot more than just catching.
Wow. Well, we're going to come back and continue talking about mentoring and connecting with others and continuing talking about connecting with nature and healing and all the many things that you've been involved with, Dr. Franklin. We're so delighted to have you on our show today on Alive to Thrive. We're going to take a short break for station identification and a couple of ads, and we'll be right back with Dr. Sharon Franklin. Stay with us.
Today's episode, Bobcat in the Cave.
Oh, nuts! There's a bobcat in this cave! Save us, Sassy!
You will, but first you'd like to stress the importance of cat adoption? Over 5 million cats go into animal shelters every year and they need to be adopted? Help us, Sassy! Why bother? We'll just get into more trouble tomorrow?
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt!
We're open for business. The Greater Good Ministries Book and Gift Shop is now open for business, featuring metaphysical and uplifting books from your favorite authors, such as Doreen Virtue, Wayne Dyer, Michael Edward Owens. We've added handcrafted one-of-a-kind jewelry, pendants, earrings, and bracelets, and now have an exclusive selection of crystals, rocks, and stones for your metaphysical toolbox. Take a look at our hand-dug Arkansas crystals, imported Brazilian crystals, Tibetan crystals, and Reiki healing stones. All of our rocks, crystals, and stones have been Reiki infused, blessed, and cleared, ready for use. You can reserve your copy of Crystal Healing 2012 and Beyond, Reverend B's new book, A Comprehensive Guide of Rocks, Crystals, and Stones for the New Age. Visit ggmradio.com and click Bookshop in the menu bar. That's ggmradio.com. You're listening to Alive to Thrive with Brenda Frazier on GGM Radio. And now, back to the show.
Hello, and welcome back to Alive to Thrive. My name is Brenda Frazier, and our guest today has been Dr. Sharon Franklin of Virginia. And we were talking about her spiritual journey, her trips to Peru, and just following your passion and your dream. And I want to get back to something we haven't really talked too much about, and that is about the connection between natural healing using plant-based medicine, if you will, or things found in nature to help animals and to help people. I have a friend that just posted today on Facebook who said her golden retriever was just diagnosed with cancer, and I had a golden retriever that died a year or two ago from also cancer. And, you know, in reading about that, part of it is in that breed, but part of it is the nutritional choices that Americans particularly are giving their pets. Dr. Franklin, can you tell us a little bit more about this? Why so many store-bought dog foods are unhealthy for our dogs and for our cats, if it's cat food?
Excellent question. You know, I think that it's been pretty amazing. I think there are a lot of challenges in the environment, and pets are exposed to the same things that we are in the environment. And in the foods, they're eating more, probably more processed foods than we are, since they don't tend to eat or get as many fresh vegetables and meats. I think that the processing probably had, and the additives has something to do with that. It's pretty interesting that, you know, when I was coming through school, they really talked about pet foods, you know, processed pet foods and pet food companies. And you know, I think as a society, we've been trained to believe that the best food for our dogs and cats is the commercial pet foods. And I have to step back, you know, now, and I look and I think, you know, dogs and cats were surviving a long time on foods that we've been eating before we had these big commercial companies. Now, there are a lot of very good, more natural diets that have less preservatives and additives that are on the market now. And I think that as the public is being educated for their own foods about processing, about different ingredients, different additives, then the pet food companies are becoming more aware and more savvy, and they're creating healthier diets. And so I think that it's a combination of what they're exposed to in the environment, but also I think in the breeds have predispositions, but also there are things I think in the foods that perhaps the animal should not have been exposed to. And, you know, we had specific diets for some specific conditions that were created by companies for those those specific conditions, say for kidney disease or heart disease or diabetes. And I think that those are specially formulated and are very helpful. But in the big picture, we ended up feeding our own animals, our dogs, a more natural diet of raw beef and cooked vegetables with a little bit of kibble for their teeth. So I think that it's something now that is more accessible, is more natural diets, and then people might be more willing now to cook and prepare food for their animals. But I think nutrition definitely plays a big part on turning on genes and turning off genes, cancer genes. And you were talking about different supplements. I believe that there are supplements that can, that are antioxidant and that can keep cancer genes turned off and can help animals as well as people maintain optimal health and support their systems, their immune system and their bodily systems, support them to do the things that our bodies are meant to do, which is to be healthy.
Mm-hmm. So, my dental assistant actually started talking to me about buying meat frozen, fresh rabbit, chicken, different things. She gets it through some online site. For her cats, and we started talking about that. But let's talk about some of the natural supplements. So what are some of the natural supplements you've used on your own pets in your own household, and how have they worked?
We probably the longest supplement that we've been using is mangosteen fruit, and it's a juice, a puree from a whole fruit puree from the mangosteen plant. It's when you look at the science behind the mangosteen fruit, which is it's a fruit from Southeast Asia. There's over 2,000 articles and studies from around the world and laboratories and medical schools around the world on this amazing plant and the healing properties of the plant. And it, the mangosteen actually has a class of phytonutrients called xanthones, which are potent anti-inflammatories. And so they work, they're COX-2 inhibitors, which people might recognize from some of the non-steroidal anti-inflammatories that are on the pharmaceutical market. But they also, these xanthones, there are some, over in this fruit, there are over 40 of the known, over 200 in nature, but 40 xanthones. And then some of these are anti-cancer, and they've demonstrated in the laboratory against different types of cancer cells, breast cancer, liver cancer, lung cancer, that the xanthones in this fruit can help actually kill cancer cells. And they're looking into what the mechanisms of this process of apoptosis or killing of these cancer cells. And there are a lot of studies presently going on about the anti-cancer properties of this mangosteen juice and mangosteen fruit. So the antioxidants, anti-inflammatories, and also a lot of different phytonutrients. So we found where we were introduced to this juice, and I heard about how some physicians were using it in their practice and really did my research and looked at PubMed of the National Institutes of Health and seeing the different scientific studies and thought this is the real thing. And then having studied the plants in Peru and seeing that most of our pharmaceuticals do come from nature, originally from a plant source, and then the companies will distill out and take one ingredient and then create a drug from it. In nature, it's in balance. And so with all my research, I thought this is something that I want to use. So my husband and I take it, and we have gave it to our Labradors, and they got two extra excellent quality years of life taking this mangosteen juice supplement with their food. And our two cats have been taking the mangosteen supplement too. We just lost one cat, and so we have one left, but she's about 18, and she gets it twice a day mixed with her food, and she's just thriving.
Well, that's actually how I saw that it was used for animals was with my cat about 5 years ago. We had a cat that for over a year was losing weight, wasn't able to absorb the nutrition in her food, losing her fur. She was emaciated, and our vet, you know, was at a loss to what was causing it. She had run all kinds of tests on this cat, and I had only been personally consuming mangosteen juice for myself, having wires and screws in my leg from a car crash I survived in 1996, and I think I'd been on the juice for about 3 weeks, and you know, my best friend said, gee, you know, maybe we should try this juice on the cat, because we had heard anecdotally it had helped horses and various animals and dogs, and you know, well, what do we got to lose? We were about to put the cat to sleep anyway and put her down, because like I said, she couldn't hold any nutrition. And she had no bowel control at that point. I mean, she was as close to death as you can be. And I don't know how she was hanging on. And at some point, you know, quality of life, you know, as pet owners, the one kind thing we can do for our pets is to let them have a peaceful death. But,
sure.
You know, we started giving it to her, and I'll be darned, you know. Within a week, her health was turning around, and you know, that little kitty is still with us 5 years later, bounding up and down and playing with the other animals. I mean, if I didn't witness it firsthand, I certainly wouldn't have believed it if someone had told me about the story. But I do believe that there are things in nature that God gave us, and we haven't even discovered them all yet, right? You know, there's probably
Absolutely.
So many more things out there we don't even know.
Absolutely.
But I think it's interesting that plants have adapted to their environment, and plants that have to survive harsh environmental conditions, whether it's extreme heat or cold, or, you know, they develop some kind of mechanism for those environmental conditions that it's transferred to and can be digested and benefit a human or an animal, then, you know, these are things that I think are available to us. And you've seen this in other cultures. You've seen this yourself firsthand in Native American cultures and the use of aloe as it's common knowledge now. But there was a time in the not-so-distant past where people were not aware of all the medicinal qualities of aloe. And what are some of the things you saw in Peru?
We were so blessed with being able to walk through the rainforest in what they call the eyebrow of the jungle, in the headwaters of the Amazon, to walk through the jungle with this gentleman who was a conservationist. He was passionate about the jungle and about nature. And on this walk, he took our group that we brought to Peru to study with native healers, and he just gave us a tour of the jungle, and he would stop at a plant, and he would say, tell us what that plant was good for, and say this plant was good for working with the kidneys and kidney function. And we'd go a little bit further, and he would show us a plant that might be good for working with supporting the bloodstream. He would show us a plant that was good for headaches. It was just a real blessing to see, and how much wisdom this gentleman had of the plants in the rainforest of the jungle, and to see what what a gift there was. And then the plants, I believe that the plants have their own consciousness. And that, like you said, they can transfer that through the physical, through chemicals and through their makeup, but they can help us, our physical bodies and our animals' bodies, to reach optimal health. And so, you know, we learned about, you know, how they used plants for not only thatching roofs, but for nutrition, plants that had extra vitamins. There are plants that a 2 drops can heal you and 4 drops can kill you. So that there's so much there that, like you said, we're not even aware of, but that people that live there, they may not know the scientific name or properties, but they do know that this plant will work for this condition. And our Western science is trying to catch up to figure out why do those plants work.
That's fascinating. So in our remaining minutes here, this has gone very quickly. It's been fascinating, all the different things you've been involved with. You are now taking various types of healers and massage therapists and nurses and anyone interested in physical healing or in spirituality to Peru annually. Tell us about your next trip and tell us how people can learn more or sign up for that trip.
Well, I would love to. We're just passionate about introducing people to these native healers and to these traditions. And so we have a trip in August from the 6th through the 17th that will be bringing a group down to Peru. Usually there's 15 people or so that go with us. And like you say, they can be from physicians to nurses to therapists, to people that are interested in their own healing or in spirituality. And we'll be traveling to the Sacred Valley, which is one of the richest areas on Earth for agriculture, seeing beautiful terraced lands where the Incas and the pre-Inca civilizations built these beautiful terraces that essentially were scientific laboratories for growing different crops and different plants. And that culture actually took the nightshade, one of the nightshades, which actually was the potato, and from a poisonous plant to being edible, and now they have thousands of varieties of potatoes. But so we'll be going to the Sacred Valley, to Machu Picchu, which is one of the most well-known area sacred sites in Peru, and they believe that these particular sites are kind of like some of the sites in the Southwest and throughout the world, Stonehenge, but they're areas that perhaps the energy of the earth is more accessible. And so the cultures and civilizations that inhabited this land early on knew these sacred spots or these energy spots and built their citadels and such there and used the land and built things like terraces as kind of solar collectors. And so they knew how to work with the energy of the sun, the energy of the stars, to collect this energy and then focus it on the plants and the agriculture and creating new varieties of plants that are edible. So we'll be going to the Sacred Valley, to Machu Picchu, and then to the sacred mountain that's in the book, Gift of the Jaguar, Apu, or Mountain Ausangate, one of their sacred mountains that is a kind of a protector of that area, and doing some horseback riding on a day trip up to the mountain and back, as well as traveling through the Sacred Valley and Machu Picchu, and then through just the beautiful cathedrals and such that have been built on top of ancient Inca places of importance, so that the Spanish came in and they knocked down a lot of the Inca buildings and such, and then they built their cathedrals on top of these foundations of stone. And it's quite interesting that the pre-Inca and Inca civilization, they really knew about sustainability, because those structures that they built, some of the stones are several tons in weight, and they're placed together without any mortar, and they fit together kind of like the bones in our hands and on our feet. They nestle together, and so these structures are built so that they can withstand the earthquakes and the shifting that goes on through the Andes Mountains. And a lot of these structures that were used as foundations, when big earthquakes came, the foundation stayed, and then the buildings that were put on, the more modern buildings put on top, are the ones that crumbled. So it's pretty amazing that the wisdom of that civilization and working with nature and with the land.
Wow. Well, we just want to make sure people do know how to learn more about you and about these trips. And your website is Doctors, D-O-C-T-O-R-S, Doctors John and Sharon.com. And on that website, our listeners can learn about your trips to Peru. There's some beautiful photos there that will get people very excited about going. There's a mailing list that people can sign up to get messages from you. And then there's also information about the book, how to order it, and about Dr. Sharon Franklin's healing and wellness coaching that she does both with people and animals, and can give advice either in person or over the phone. So there's some amazing stuff there. They also have a Twitter account and a Facebook page. So really want to encourage people to use social media to connect with Dr. Sharon and learn more about her life that has been dedicated to the well-being of mind, body, and spirit. Any closing thoughts, Sharon, before we go, for our listeners?
Well, we are really excited about sharing this, these concepts of health and well-being, the art of allowing, our passions to inspire us to the next step along our journey. And we believe that we're in a constant state of growth. You know, every day we're learning more, we're growing more. And so we just are delighted to share this with people. John is finishing up his second novel, which is also takes place in Peru. This one is more in the jungles of Peru, but again, shares in the culture of Peru and about the kind of the magical and the mystical ability to communicate with people, with animals, with nature, and following our dreams. And I just wanted to let you know, Brenda, how appreciative I am and we are of you and the gifts that you bring to the table in sharing wellness and well-being with your listeners. And you have quite an amazing journey yourself, and I have just been delighted to learn more about you and what you do, and just really appreciate your uplifting and bringing well-being to the world.
Well, thank you so much, and we do hope people will connect with you online, and we'll be back next Friday on Alive to Thrive. My name is Brenda Fraser, and we thank you for spending time with us, and we'll catch up with you next week. Thanks again. Have a good weekend.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
when peace will come. It begins with you and me and how we see the trees and the fish in the sea.
It's a big round world. It's a beautiful world. We come.